Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to another Oilfield Basics Discover podcast episode. I'm your host, Derek Craig, and today we're going to be talking about shifting workforce demographics. The general workforce is getting older and how that's affecting the oilfield and oilfield service companies. And also, we're going to be touching on a little bit about impacts of big data and kind of how that can be handled going forward and kind of dealing with all of this. So we've got a guest, Donovan Volk, with us here today. And one thing I forgot to mention, obviously this is the podcast, right? To never stop learning about new things about our industry. So forgot that in the intro, but every single episode we have a different topic. This one is definitely one of those, as I would call like an auxiliary topic. Definitely very, very much so related to oil field and day-to-day life and transitions and everything kind of going on, but not so much operational focused. And if those are the types of episodes you like, we definitely got some of those in store, so stay tuned. But definitely from feedback I've got from other people listening to this podcast, these definitely tend to be some of the most beneficial episodes, trying to talk about some of these more general auxiliary topics per se. But very glad Donovan reached out to me, and I think it'll be pretty interesting episode here today. Before we get too much further, though, I do want to apologize for missing last week's podcast. And by missing, I mean not putting it out. So I just basically started a new rotational schedule at work. So that kind of changed things a little bit. I had to figure out how to rebalance my time and figure out how to schedule podcast recording around it. And then also some of my off times with this rotation. I'm going to be traveling last off shift, and then this upcoming one I'll be traveling. So it's kind of hard to slide these in here currently. But just a heads up, sorry about the missed episode in the past. Hopefully I won't have that here for the next couple episodes or so. So stick around, bear with me through this transition for myself as well. Another thing I want to encourage you guys to all do is to leave a review. You probably know this, especially if you listen to a bunch of podcasts, definitely a way you can help the show. Also, I like hearing from you guys, and we haven't had one for a little while, so please do that. I have had people reaching out to me, though, specifically on LinkedIn, and just dropping nice little notes to me about things that I've either helped them with or how cool the podcast is or whatever. I had someone just recently, is a student in Calgary, SAIT, Polytechnic, Nick, I think is the college that he's going to. And he's talking about, he said, the content quality is amazing. You're very well-spoken, motivated me into becoming more comfortable with my own public speaking. So that was pretty cool. Knowing I'm helping out another college student. I guess I'm not a college student anymore, but so yeah, check out our YouTube channel. That's where his comments were stemming from. There's definitely a lot of content on up there, especially for students. Try to reflect that in some of the videos that we do, some advice videos and general videos like that. And of course, videos we do with companies. And Sebastian, the other half of Wolf of Basics, is still at Merida College, still a student. We just had the third annual Merida College Oil and Gas Technical Exhibition, something that Sebastian and I actually started up 2 years ago with another student. That's still going on today. We just had that this past weekend. And so we shot some videos there with some vendors, and hopefully those will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye out for that. Pretty much last thing I have wrote down is, future topic wise, like I said, if you're looking for more of the technical ones, also we've got one coming up I'm trying to plan about casing centralizers, and maybe you wouldn't think there's a bunch of that topic, but there definitely is. So have someone talk on that and some other technical topics. But I encourage you guys to please reach out, just like Donovan did, just like literally every single one of my guests did. I don't know that I've specifically asked someone to be a podcast guest. Everybody's pretty much just proposed themselves. Please don't hesitate to reach out. You don't have to have a bunch of degrees or a tremendous amount of expertise, but there's a willingness to talk about your respective topic. So please reach out and definitely help and help this show to continue and to grow and to spread your knowledge with others. So that's what the show's all about. And so with that said, that's pretty much all my intro. It's actually kind of longer than I had figured it would be. But thanks for sticking through that. And Donovan is on the line. He is the VP of operations at a company called FieldCap, which does work with companies, helping them to digitize their field tickets and just helping companies transition from, to go paperless, right? And we've had some guests kind of talk on those similar topics, and he reached out and proposed something similar. But I worked with him, asked him a little bit talked with him, and he discovered that this would be a really good topic to discuss as well, maybe a little bit fresher with our audience too, that one that we haven't covered. But that's definitely, that's his background. He's got about 15 years in oil field related services, everything from telecommunications and software development and more. So without further ado, Donovan, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for the opportunity to join you today.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate you reaching out, and you're broadcasting from Calgary, right?
I would love to say sunny Calgary, but on this particular day, we're getting inches and inches of snow. So depending on where you're at, it's a great day to be inside. Or if you're a skier, then you're probably just eager for the dump of snow that's
coming. Yeah, it's definitely, obviously not quite in Canada, but it's definitely a little bit different being out here in Denver too. And just kind of the anticipation, right, of the cold weather kind of swooping in, but still hasn't worked its way south yet. So nice we have at least a little bit of a transition into it. But yeah, very cool that you're from Canada. I think you're probably like our third, maybe fourth guest from Canada. So pretty cool to have you Canadian guys as a part of the show.
It's one of the great things about the oil field industry and energy sector in general is that it spans countries, continents. Oh, and the fact that the two energy systems between Canada and the U.S. are so connected. Devices and people are agnostic to the border. It moves back and forth, whether it's a drilling rig or the data and the technical expertise. People move back and forth. It's a great industry to be in, and it's an exciting time, even given the challenges that we have.
Yeah, and something with Canada too, it's interesting, at least for me, every time I have a guest from Canada, to learn a little bit every single time about, you know, some of the differences in Canada. You talk about a lot of similarities and sharing rigs and people and everything, but operations are quite a bit different, at least in some parts, and especially like with tar sands and stuff. Like, we don't really have too much comparable to that here in the U.S. So always pretty interesting topics out of you Canadian guys.
Well, and first of all, we like to call it the oil sands. And it is one of the cleanest operations, and I encourage any of the listeners who are learning about the industry and have not heard about the oil sands before to do some investigation, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, and one of the best things we can do through podcasts like yourself is just learn more and learn the facts, and that's knowledge is power, and you just want to make sure that you have the most amount of knowledge that you can and that it's the correct knowledge, not just hyperbole or opinion or skepticism about what needs to happen. It's real stuff that's happening in the world.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one thing that with everything, kind of all the turbulence here in Colorado, what we see here, you know, so much opposition, a lot of it stems from misunderstanding, or at least we think so, right? And so in my mind, it makes me wonder what, you know, misunderstandings I have about other industries, right? So try to always be open-minded about things and, you know, and seek out knowledge, just like you were saying, right? And that's one of the goals of this podcast. It's mostly our own industry, but, you know, even I encourage everybody, whenever you're thinking about other industries as well, kind of approach it with an open mind. Don't just believe everything you hear or see, you know, one time. We're going to fall in the same category.
Yeah, and the knowledge that you gain at one particular point in time doesn't necessarily hold true forever.
Yeah,
it's a fact that the energy industry has become far more environmentally considerate and responsible than it was even 5, 10, and especially 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So the kinds of work and the development that's happening in the industry, it's not just the baby boomers that are changing. It's the industry. It's the technology around it. So definitely shows like your own are key to people learning about some of those new technologies and how to make their own businesses run better.
Yeah, for sure. Well, tell us a little bit about your background. I kind of probably didn't do it justice, but you got a lot of cool background, and can you kind of hit on that just for a second here and kind of let us know where you're coming from?
Sure. Even though I've been in the oil field or oil-related energy services business for about 10 or 15 years, really my background goes a lot further back than that. And I've been working for almost 30 years, and part of that was with a technology company. It was one of our biggest telecommunications companies here in Canada called TELUS. And in that organization, I was responsible for wireless networking, and we were actually doing point-to-point shots for oil field companies trying to get connectivity out to the doghouse, that last mile.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we were building 100-foot towers in order to put big radios on them and try to get that internet connectivity out to where people needed it in the field. From there, I moved into an outsourcing IT company and it was a huge multi-billion-dollar company here in Canada with reaches into the U.S. and abroad. But our focus in Calgary, our practice, was around oil and gas software services. So we provided software in 14 different product lines to the big producers and mid-size producers here in Canada, and some into the U.S. And that really was my first foray and introduction into the energy side. And then from there, I got into the SAP B1 world, where we did implementations of an ERP, that's an enterprise resource planning software, for oil field companies. Those ones were larger. Mm-hmm. But then I moved into June Warren Nichols, and I was part of the publication industry that was specifically focused on oil and gas. So our coverage was around the oil sands, the energy market in particular, and then later on we acquired an analysis company that out of the UK that had over 25 years of production data history on the Canadian and US marketplaces. So our coverage was extensive, you know, writing hundreds or thousands of articles in a period of, you know, a few months. So it was my really deep dive into the energy oil field services side of things. And from there, I joined FuelCap, which is now exclusively focused on the oil field services business and simplifying field ticketing problems for people. Mm-hmm. But today, I'm really eager to talk about kind of the shifting demographic and what that means to every oil field company that's out there.
Yeah, for sure. They're definitely a pretty relevant topic. I mean, we've definitely heard about it, but I'm excited to have more of this deep dive and hopefully get into, you know, things that we can do to, you know, as we embark upon it and as we witness it and be a part of it. We'll definitely have maybe get you on in the future for another podcast, just talking about the telecommunication stuff, because that's pretty interesting. I think that'd be something interesting to know about, you know, how all these sites communicate with each other and, you know, just understand that a little bit better. But yeah, let's sure. Dive into this topic.
Sure. And starting with the boomers, so the presentation that I've delivered before at a number of different conferences, mm-hmm. I titled it Boomers, Bits, and Big Data. So I'm going to talk about three kind of elements that are changing in the oil field business specifically. And they're in general impacting technology in the world in a lot of different ways. But for oil field services, what does it mean? Mm-hmm. Well, the baby boomers, we all understand who the baby boomers are. They're kind of that 1945 to 1965 generation. But a lot of people don't realize just how big that population was and the impact that they had on the working world. So it was back in 45 at the end of the Second World War. And I like to think that it was actually the bikini that kicked it all off, because the bikini was introduced in July of 1946. So just when the Second World War ended, this French designer unveiled it at a swimming pool in Paris. And it wasn't but a few months later when it was introduced into North America. And of course, you have a bunch of GIs returning home with new brides and eager to start a family. And lo and behold, the population exploded. Yeah. And it's more than most people understand. So the average birth rate actually almost doubled. It went up 40 to 70% within a couple of years. And it sustained that rate of population growth for that entire 20-year period until the Gen Xers came to be. So you have this huge, huge impact on the workforce. And it wasn't just, hey, we have more people. They comprised the baby boomers when they entered the workforce, and they kind of spanned that, you know, age of, you know, 20 years old to 45 years old, that 20 odd year period. They comprised more than 50% of the actual working population. And that's just when they started. So then as they moved through that aging period, they dominated. And you can see it in culture. You can see it in the growth in the population, the growth in the suburbs. But that population gets older. And right now, the average age of retirement is about 63 and a half years old, according to the Census Bureau in the U.S. And there's not as many people coming up behind them. So the Gen Xers are actually a much smaller generation. If you look at it from a total demographic, there was about 75 million baby boomers, and there's only about 54 million Gen Xers. So in oil field services companies, you see that there's a lot of the older folks that are out there that are either the field operators, the field hands, or they are the owners of the business. the Gen Xers are the ones that probably fit in that middle management category. They're the ones who are coming up. They're the ones who are probably on the succession plan for the company. But then what do you do with all of those field workers? So people look to the millennial generation, that next group that kind of came after the Gen Xers, and it's almost as big or slightly bigger than the baby boomers. And again, a lot of people don't realize that, but there's about 76 million people that would comprise that millennial generation that at this point in time are probably in the 20 to 40 year age range. Mm-hmm. Now, most people would think, well, that's great. We have enough people in terms of the population to replace the baby boomers. But it doesn't quite work that way, because baby boomers and millennials are very different groups of people. One of the things that I was looking at was a report that was done by a hiring group. So this is an organization representing HR folks, and they surveyed those HR people and they asked them, in terms of these different personality traits and characteristics, what are the differences and how would you rate the millennial population versus the baby boomer population? And the baby boomers score extremely high in terms of being confident and team players and being very optimistic. Mm-hmm. On the millennial side, the millennials come in with a higher sense of openness to change. They want to drive change, and they're far more creative and driven from a career perspective than their baby boomer counterparts. But this causes a huge difference in terms of the attitudes, and you see it in terms of the turnover of employees. So millennials will turn over, 2 to 3 years, whereas baby boomers were holding on to jobs for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, back in the day, people would start a job with a production plant, a GM or a Ford plant, and they would stay there forever. They might stay with an oil field service company forever.
Yeah.
It's just not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I think something to the perspective of millennials or even what Gen Z or whatever technically I would be or whatever group you want to put me in, but my generation, in terms of just faithfulness to their employers and stuff, one of the things that, especially in oil and gas, that I've seen just play out within my peers and everything, the companies also don't seem to have as much of, a bind on us, or what do we call it? Lost for words, been a long day.
Well, the loyalty factor.
Loyalty, there we go. Yeah,
yeah, so the loyalty not as loyal factor is very different.
Yeah, yeah, and so then us, we don't necessarily in turn, we're not as loyal also, to them. Loyalty. I don't know why I couldn't think of that word.
Well, there's, I think loyalty and respect are two really good factors to look at when it comes to the differences in the attitude between the populations. And there was another chart put together by an HR group, and they looked at baby boomers and how baby boomers see themselves. And they see themselves as the people with sense, and they get it and they understand it. And the millennials look at them as racist old dinosaurs. and the baby boomers look at the millennials as lazy, good-for-nothing wimps, and the millennials themselves kind of see themselves as the saviors of humanity, the ones that are going to come along and make things better and fix the wrongs that were created before them. So if you have these two populations, imagine it. You have an oil field service company that's run by baby boomers or owned by baby boomers, and they're trying to hire millennials. Mm-hmm. If you have this huge attitude difference between the two and how they each see each other, how do you cross that chasm? The Gen X generation is actually the best way in order to bridge that gap, because they're more of the middle of the road. They grew up with the baby boomers, and I fall into this generation. They grew up with the baby boomers, so they had to follow in their footsteps, and they had to conform to a certain degree. But there's also enough of a connection to what would be their children, the millennials, to say, well, I get it. I understand why you want those things. And the Gen Xers probably want some of that for their kids as well. They've gone through the downsizing and the right sizing, so some of their attitudes will influence those millennials, as you say, to not necessarily be as loyal without reason. So millennials will look to senior leaders and say, you got to give me a reason. It's not just because you're the president. If you're not smart, and if you don't care, and if you don't do the things that make me care about the company and about you and about what we're doing, I'll go find that somewhere else. And that's not necessarily a bad attitude to have, but if that's the reality of the attitude, then the people who run companies, and oil field companies are the most susceptible to this, because that next generation coming out to replace all those people in the field don't necessarily want to work for oil companies. Here in Canada, and you used the phrase at the beginning, tar sands. If you were an energy specialist or you were a technology specialist, would you choose to go to work for an oil company that you thought was dirty and polluting the environment and was harming the globe? Or would you go choose, even in the energy industry, a clean tech company, somebody that produces solar panels or windmills or whatever the next generation of technology would be?
Right.
And in fact, that's really true. When you look at LinkedIn, the oil and gas energy sector gets the least amount of in-mails sent to millennials out of any job position. It's not even close. They're in the bottom left-hand corner of the quadrant. Everything else in the world does better. Technology is number one, and that's where a lot of millennials want to get into. And your podcast is a good example of that, right? You're not writing a newspaper article.
I wouldn't be reading it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not what that next generation of people are looking for. So how do you, as an oil field services company, try to hire people who are actively campaigning against you and your entire industry? How do you hire those people and change their attitude? It's going to be a very difficult and challenging thing, but the oil companies, the services companies that want to succeed are going to have to find a way to do it, or they will just cease to exist because they will cease to have enough people to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely an interesting perspective of people who are trying to figure out what to do. And I've seen that too with people who, like, I get a lot of high schoolers that, and even people from other countries, like on our YouTube channel, about 40% is US, the rest of it's all international. But we get a lot of like high school students, you know, and I've got a few questions that kind of, you know, sound like, well, you know, what is the oil field really like? You know what I mean? Like, are you actually polluting? Like, there was somebody in England, I think, and he was interested in pursuing this. And he's like, what is this deal about fracking and why is everybody worked up about it? You know, stuff like this. That, you know, there's definitely that perspective out there, and there's no messaging to change anybody's mind on it, really, in the sense of, you know, a student or someone looking for a career. There's not a whole lot. There's a couple groups who are trying to do that. But, you know, from a more of a national or international perspective, it's not as prevalent as maybe some local groups. But yeah, definitely some interesting points there.
Well, and it's interesting you bring up YouTube and the whole, you know, educational aspect of it. If you were to look at people's participation and use of internet technologies, and let's focus on YouTube as an example. Mm-hmm. 25 years ago or 30 years ago, when I was starting to look for a new job, if I had told my parents that I was going to be a YouTuber, there would be no way that they would have funded my university.
No Christmas
education.
For you.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a really good example of it out there. So in my presentations in front of oil field companies, I bring up a slide and it shows these two young, you know, millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And I position it as, so what does a high potential millennial look like? And face value, they're both good looking young guys. And you look at the qualifications of one of the individuals, and his name is, I can't really pronounce it. He's Norwegian, so it's Frederick Marl. So he was born in 1983, and he's got a finance degree from Wharton. He's got an MBA at Harvard. He graduated top of his class. He went into investment banking, and he's the CEO and founder of two companies, and he secured four rounds of financing, totaling almost $5 million.
Oh, so my goodness.
You'd look at him and you go, that is a successful guy. On the other hand, you've got this other guy named Felix. And Felix was born in 89. He's Swedish, so they're both from about the same region, both about the same age. Felix dropped out of Chalmers University not even after a year. He wanted to play games on the internet. So he worked at a hot dog stand and lived in his mother's basement and played video games and recorded it. Now, he recorded it and he put it onto YouTube. And YouTube is huge, right? YouTube starts to gain following. So I looked this guy up and I said, well, how many followers does he have? And I compared him. And I compared him to The Rock, who's super popular. The Rock has about 3 million followers on YouTube. This guy beats him, hands down, not even close. Lady Gaga has about 10 million followers. Beyonce has about 17. The two of them combined don't even come close to Felix in terms of the number of followers. Now, you might know who this individual is. Anyone who's a Gen Xer or a baby boomer has never heard of this guy. But he goes under the name of PewDiePie. And PewDiePie is the number one. He's ranked number one on YouTube for the number of subscribers. As of September of last year, he had 66 million subscribers. And over 18 billion views of his YouTube channel. Of the postings. And what does he do for the people who are listening? He plays video games. And he doesn't even need to play them well. He just plays them and he makes silly commentary and people follow them. And my daughter thinks he's funny, so she follows him. I checked on it today. He's gone from 66 million subscribers and has just now broken 100 million subscribers on YouTube.
He's raking the money.
So compared to the other guy, Frederick, who has his Harvard degree in international finance and banking, and he's done all this, Felix, the YouTuber, has a net worth of over $20 million.
Wow.
So what is better? What does a high potential millennial look like?
Yeah.
I would challenge any Gen Xer or baby boomer out there to try to determine what a high performing millennial is going to look like, because you don't know. It is so far removed from our reality, how we grew up in terms of climbing the corporate ladder, learning a trade, applying it, getting promoted, getting to that next level in the job. It's just not the world that we live in anymore. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to adapt as an energy industry, we have to realize that we're competing for talent. We're going to compete for talent against healthcare, technology, and millennials just creating their own future. Again, I'll use you as an example. You have your own channel. You have a podcast. I've delivered hundreds of presentations, probably thousands of presentations, but hundreds of speeches in my life. This is the very first podcast I have ever participated in.
Oh, cool. Well, welcome to the podcasting world. It's kind of a little different.
At 50 years old, I finally cracked that.
There we go.
That ceiling.
Well, I feel honored that this is where you cracked the egg at.
So that's baby boomers and the impact of the millennial generation. It's going to change, and I'm going to get into it a little bit later in terms of what we can do to address those issues, but there's a couple of other things that I just wanted to bring up, and that has to do with the technology side of it. And if there's a baby boomer listening, which I would be surprised if it's a huge demographic of your podcast subscribers, but let's say that there are, they hear about technology and they have to put up with technology, and they don't mind technology when it comes to their business. If it's their oil field service business, and like you said, it has to do with new casing technology or new fracking technology or new directional drilling technology, they're all over it. They want to learn how to do their job better. But the difference is the technology is impacting them in ways that they really can't even foresee. And if you look at the number of connected devices that are out there, and I'll go back to my telecom days, when I was kind of getting into the working world back in 91, early 90s, the only computers that you could get were desktop computers, and they would be in your office. That was it. And at that point in time, according to a tech survey that I found here from Intel, there was probably about a million odd devices on desktops. So not that much.
Mm-hmm.
Flash forward another 10 years to about 2002, and you have 500 million devices on the internet. And that's because you get laptops. You get laptops, and now the cost and the price point has gone down. Now that's an inflection point. So all of a sudden, things start to kick off, and you get the development of smaller and smaller pieces of technology. You get the introduction of the iPhone. The IoT itself kind of came into its inception in about 2008, 2009. And at that point, you're probably looking at, I don't know, upwards of 5 billion connected devices around the world. If you look at the forecasts forecasts at that point in time, at around 2010, were looking to get around the neighborhood of 50 to 75 billion connected devices by next year, by 2020.
Wow.
And if you trust Intel, they think that number is going to be upwards of 200 billion connected devices by 2020. And if you ask a late Gen Xer or a baby boomer, how many connected devices do they own? They might say two, right? They might have a cell phone, probably, and a laptop. That's probably it.
Yeah.
You go to the next generation and Gen Xers and the millennials, you're going to have probably two or three connected devices at the very least. You're going to have...
Stop and count.
Yeah, you'd have to go through it, whether it's your watch, the wearable devices, everything in your house can practically be connected. I mean, my family, we just introduced one of those Nest thermostats, so it's connected. My wife controls the heat from our bedroom and turns it up and down all day long to manage the temperature. But that's just an example of how many different connected devices that we have. And the oil field is very, very similar. They've gone through a revolution in terms of the size and the connectivity of devices in the field. So like I said, when I was at TELUS, we were extending wireless coverage, not just through the cellular network. So it starts with satellite, then it goes to cellular, but also wireless Wi-Fi point-to-point shots. So wireless area networks. We were bringing high-speed data connections into the field because the types of technology being implemented at the well site required that kind of bandwidth. Couldn't just use dial-up or satellite anymore. And now everything at the well site is going to get connected. And not just connected in terms of, hey, I've got more laptops out there, but you think of RFID tagging for assets, and not just passive RFID, but active RFID, radio frequency identifiers, for the folks that call, things that tag every asset, smart barcodes, devices that have telemetric data, your trucks having GPS and AVL sensors in them to track speed, idle time, hours of travel.
Better hope they don't start tracking idle time on everybody here in the oil industry. We're going to be shut down.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because back in my time at TELUS, they introduced that kind of technology into our trucks. And immediately we realized hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings a year in terms of gas, because it became a policy for the company to tell their workers, don't let your truck idle.
Yeah.
And they made the truck shut off after a few minutes. So, again, in the winter, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, so you have to be careful with that.
It became a policy, and it has an environmental benefit, but it also has this impact of data. So when you have all of this information that's coming at you, again, as smaller service companies, it can be a little overwhelming. It's not bad when you have, you know, again, a couple of connections for the internet, and now you have to send off your invoices to a company to get them paid, and you probably start as an oil field company sending things via email. But all of a sudden, these companies, the producers, are pushing their costs down to the service companies, so they're asking them to become more technically literate, more capable. The producers don't want to have 100 people in their offices trying to deal with faxes coming in of all the data from the field.
Yeah.
When I first started working at Xerox, this was way back in 91, fax machines were one of the new technologies being introduced in the field, and they had a technology called polling. So the guys at the end of the day, they would put a stack of paper, and if there's any Gen Xers and baby boomers on the call, they'll remember this. You'd put your stack of paperwork for the day into the feeder of your fax machine, and you'd leave it there and you'd go home. Because at the head office, they had another bigger fax machine that would call out to each of the locations through the telephone line, and they would call that fax machine and they would pull that piece of paper and then scan it in. So then they would have that the next morning in the head office and they could start entering it. That was a huge breakthrough, just being able to get that paperwork from the field through a telecopier is what they were called, or a fax machine, was a huge breakthrough. Wow. Now, we're getting data that is being transmitted by sensors on virtually any device or pump or manifold out there.
Yeah, and definitely like working for a pretty big operator, like if you can't even, like there's so many things you can even control, but if you can't control it, it's probably at least monitored. That's exactly. Crazy how much is being monitored, and that, for every single well, for every single location, for everything, it's crazy.
Everything, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of sensors in the field, and the impact of all of that data generating millions and millions of points of data. And again, I used to work at TELUS, and I was in the data center business, so we were creating these big data centers, and we had to put in these storage area networks, and we weren't talking about megabytes of data. We were talking about petabytes of data, like we're millions and millions and millions and millions of bits of data to be stored and duplicated. And now it's done in the cloud, this ubiquitous cloud, which is essentially a great big rack of servers and storage devices. But you need to be able to turn that information into relevant decision-making data. So the questions are still the same about how do you run your business and how do you get information out of your devices or out of the field, and mm-hmm. how do you make sense of it so that you can turn it into something that as a service company you can action.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to developing some useful strategies, and it's probably worthwhile that we get into a couple of those. So how do you deal with the boomers and all of this data and all of this expansion of information? What are you going to do about it? Well, there are a few things that we can easily take advantage of. So one of the first things is documenting what you do. This sounds like an easy thing. Most companies are very poor at documenting their processes. They just don't know what happens in the field. And if you think about that, when you have this baby boomer generation that is literally within 5 to 10 years of completely exiting the workforce. So most baby boomers are going to be between 55 and 65 years old. And if the average age of retirement is 63, you maybe have 8 years left. So if you don't have a plan for how you're going to get the knowledge, and a lot of it is that tribal knowledge. It's, hey, this guy knows that guy, and yeah, we don't really have things written down, but you just got to go and ask John, and John tribal knows what knowledge. To do.
And that's a pretty good way of putting it.
Yeah, I use two personas. John is your older, you know, baby boomer type worker. He's going to be 50 years plus, and he's grown up in the oil patch. He's worked his way up, probably has a high school or a secondary certificate type education, but everything that he's learned in the field, getting his hands dirty, doing things. And then you have your Joshes at the other end that are in that, you know, 20 to, you know, 35, 40-ish range. They've grown up with technology. Everything is connected. They don't know what the world is like without being able to log on and ask a question and get an immediate answer.
Yeah.
So you have to deal with these two ends of the spectrum between the Johns of the world and the Joshes, and you got to get the knowledge out of John's head and somehow get Josh to understand it. So documentation is part of it, but it doesn't have to be so complex. It can be as simple as just, again, taking a piece of paper and writing it out. Just putting it down will be half of the problem. And then you can start looking at ways to simplify and to automate. Because if you don't have those Johns working for you anymore, how do you take advantage of what they were able to accomplish and what they know? And how do you turn that into some type of a systemic process for your business? And that goes to point number two, which is recruiting new talent and then training them. So if you're going to hire the millennials of the world, you're going to have to attract them in a different way. It's not just going to be with dollars, although that's part of it. So the dollars and cents are still going to matter to people, but they don't matter as much to millennials. And again, this is a hard thing for oil field companies to kind of grapple with, because in the past, they were used to competing for talent on the basis of price. If I just pay $5 more, somebody will jump ship and they'll come over to my side. That's not necessarily the case. Millennials have a higher degree of, as you indicated, they want to matter. They want the work that they do to make a difference. They want, they themselves want to contribute. So the role for them at a particular company, they will move for a career advancement in order to have a bigger impact. And that impact may not necessarily need to come with a dollar raise, but it needs to come with responsibility. But how do you tell John that he's going to give up his responsibility because Josh just joined the company and he wants to be the director of whatever it happens to be? So there's got to be a way for that knowledge to be transitioned over the next, you know, again, 3, 5, 10 years, depending on how much you think you have and what the age of your workforce is in a mm-hmm. services company. But you got to get the millennials into the process. And in my opinion, you have to get them into the management process. It's not enough just to stick them in the field and say, yeah, for the next 5 or 10 years, you're just going to do it the exact same way that we all did it. And you're going to go and turn a wrench right. or whatever it might be in a doghouse.
You need to get them both involved with the same process and then yeah. learn off each other. And then, cause that's the way like I'm on that right now. Basically I'm in like a rotation just mainly for the purpose of learning. And I'm trying to get to the point and it's getting there slowly, but getting to the point where, you know, I've built some trust up with the operators or whoever I'm with that, you know, I can literally help them hands on. And that leads to such, the conversations I've had today versus, you know, in the past couple of weeks, like it's so much deeper just because, you know, now you've got real questions to ask, you know what I mean?
Well, and you're taking that initiative, which is fantastic. Some folks won't do that. So they need to have a little bit more of a structure. Yeah. And establishing some type of a mentor relationship or even an expectation that those Gen Xers or the baby boomers are going to be sharing their knowledge. And it could just be as simple as a lunch and learn, or it could be ride-alongs. You know, like you said, you're going into the field and you're learning from the guys that you're working with, which makes you smarter and allows you to ask better questions. You're going to soak all that up. And the way that you're going to organize it and categorize it and systematize it is going to be probably a lot different yeah. than the way that the John of the world would have done it before. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not a bad thing. It's just different. But the companies need to have some kind of a way to put that knowledge in there. Because again, like we talked about, that millennial, that up and coming new young manager who learned something might be there for a year or two and then decide he's going to go work for another company because he has the opportunity to be a direct line manager, or it's just, hey, you know what? It's a cool new area and he wanted to go live there, or she wanted to go live there for a while.
Right. Yeah.
It's a very different world. And as owners and managers of the business, we have to be attuned to that. And that means sitting down and really thinking through the strategy of succession planning and career development. Not succession planning for your senior staff and your key managers, but also the development of those employees coming up. And realizing that they may not be with you for 2 to 5 or 10 years. They may only be there for 18 months, 36 months, and they may go somewhere else. So mm-hmm. how do you get enough benefit out of that employee and allow them the flexibility to work and to grow and to do things, but also contribute? And that contribution might just be document what you learn. So for you, Derek, you're learning all these things. I hope your company is asking you for your feedback and asking you to put some best practices, mm-hmm. write them down. I mean, that would be a huge benefit to any company that you're working for in terms of the next person that comes along. What did you learn? What was special? What was different? And how do you make the next guy's learning not take 6 months, but maybe take 3 months mm-hmm. or 1 month?
Yeah.
Huge advantage.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. One of the things that I like to get, and when I've mentioned multiple times on the show for people to reach out, I also really like it when people reach out. I also like a lot of times asking for feedback. And that's something I think not only just professionally in our own, you know, in our own lives, but also from a company perspective, that feedback is pretty critical. And to me, there's no value in someone that just gives you like positive feedback all the time, right? It has to be critical. Like, you know, here's something you could do better at.
Well, and it's constructive. So,
yes.
I mean, there was an old kind of thinking or approach to giving feedback. It was the sandwich approach. So you give somebody a compliment, you credit them with doing something good. Then you give them the constructive piece, which is the, you know, the meat in the middle. And then you give them another piece of encouraging news at the end. So that was your sandwich of constructive criticism.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily work that exact way anymore. People want to know what they need to do to be better, but they also want their opinions to be heard. So it's a two-way feedback. It's mm-hmm. not just one way from the manager down. It's really being critical about what the company needs to succeed, and not just 1 year or 2 year, but longer term. And I don't think a lot of business owners know this, but there's a there's a shift that's happening in the oil patch in terms of valuations of companies, and it's not all about the dollars and cents. The businesses themselves have to be sustainable long term. So if you were a venture capital company or a private equity company looking at investing in an oil field services organization, mm-hmm. part of your evaluation is going to be the sustainability of that company. And if you looked at it and went, well, this company is great, look at all the work that they've won. But if you dig and you scratch below the surface and you go, well, 50 to 60% of their working workforce is going to be retiring in the next 5 years. Okay, that's one factor. What's the percentage of new young workers coming in? Oh, if it's very low and they have no documented processes and everything is just done through this tribal knowledge of, well, we throw people at it. We just hire more people and the Marges of the world will take all of those pieces of paper and we'll just hand key them into a spreadsheet. That company's just not going to be worth as much. So even if you're a baby boomer who's looking to exit the business and sell off, if you want to maximize the return you're going to get for your business, you've got to make investments in your people and your technology. And you've got to be willing to change and listen. And it's going to be hard because you're going to get a lot of feedback as an owner and a middle manager that you're not used to getting. Because like you said, your employees are used to just smiling and telling you what you want to hear.
Yeah, and we actually
quite like that.
Yeah, we had a couple episodes ago, we had a podcast that was talking about from CFOs, and one of the things that he talked about was how companies are valued, and way more than we think comes down to the people and the management. More, you know, it's not just the assets. There's a large part of that is the people.
Yeah, and it's how you're going to deal with change that's coming, because we're in a state of flux in the energy industry. Here in Canada, we have a huge environmental movement that is demanding higher levels of responsibility when it comes to development. Mm-hmm. That's just a reality. There are regulation differences between Canada and the U.S., and there's incentive differences, which is why you see so much development happening in, you know, West Texas and New Mexico for you folks down in the U.S. Here, I mean, we're having difficulties just getting any pipeline built even within our country. The level of angst and regulatory impact that's going to come down on the energy industry is going to make it harder and harder for companies to succeed. So whatever they do to manage their business is going to have to make them more efficient. And one of the five pieces of advice, number four would be to simplify your big data, your IoT life. And to do that, you really ask yourself three basic questions. What are you going to do with the information? How easy or difficult is it going to be to gather that data and make it relevant? And number three, what will it take to maintain that data integrity? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't kind of think about that maintenance piece of it. So you see this all the time with forms. Somebody will create a form and they go, oh, I need to know this. And when you only have a piece of paper, you only have so much space to ask questions. But as soon as somebody puts that into a spreadsheet, oh my God, well, look at all the columns I have. Oh, hey, you know what? I could just add another box here. The guy should enter that information. Or, as we were talking about all these connected devices, they can just give it to me. They can just send it automatically. That's fantastic, but what are you going to do with it? Like, I've seen people who are sitting on huge mountains of data, but they can't make sense of it. They can't correlate it because the systems don't talk to one another. Oh, they have no idea.
That's a huge issue.
Is there a correlation, or is it, you know, is it the fact that the weather got cold that means that my utilization went down? Or is it mm-hmm. the fact that I have a very poor preventative maintenance strategy? Or is it the fact that I purchased a bunch of equipment from a poor manufacturer? Or is it not the manufacturer that's the problem, but it's the service company that supports that piece of equipment that's the problem? So there could be four different issues in here, but you have mountains of data to sift through to do it. Don't clutter your mind. Focus on the core business issues of what it takes to run your business and get that data in front of you, and then move to the next level. Mm-hmm. So simplify your big data IoT life. That would be my fourth piece of advice. And then number five, it would be implement technologies that you can get a payback or an ROI in under 12 months. the market is moving so quick and the technology is moving so quick at this point in time that if you're expecting an ROI of 24 or 36 months on anything other than a revenue producing asset, so if you go buy, I don't know, a big directional drilling rig, great. It could have a longer ROI because you know that you're going to use this for years, or if it's a truck or something like that. But if you're going to make investments in technology, whether that's a RFID tag on a pallet that's sitting out in your shop, or if you're going to put in some new laptops or tablets for your employees, that payback should be 6 months, 12 months, because you really can't see farther than that, and the technology itself is going to change. So be sure that you can get your ROI quickly and move on. And don't worry about everything being connectable and connected and integrated. Point solutions have their place. And I've learned this over the last 30 years of dealing with big technology companies. So again, you know, my Xerox time and my time at TELUS, the big telecommunications company, and the big BPO that I worked at, everyone wants to pitch big solutions. And sometimes those can be good for the right size of company with the right problem. But for the most part, for an oil field services company with anything less than 100 or 200 people, you can get away with point solutions that address key business issues and make you become 20% or 50% more efficient. And our little company does field ticketing. But just getting rid of that piece of paper in the field, we've had clients report back to us that their DSO, their day sales outstanding, have dropped by 50%, and they've cut the time in half that it takes to produce an invoice and get paid. And they've cut the amount of administration staff either in half or by, you know, almost two-thirds.
Yeah.
Those are huge real costs that somebody can save this year to make them more efficient so that they can go buy that truck, so that they can go buy that other piece of revenue generating equipment. So get the costs out of the business that are just redundant data entry type things. Look for the quick wins. Those things will make the biggest difference in any business.
Yeah. No, solid advice. Data entry sucks.
It does, but in our research, 90% of companies are still doing a lot of their field ticketing on paper or spreadsheets.
Yeah.
It's the fact of where they came from, and it's not a slight against how they've grown up, but it's going to change, and it's going to change dramatically in the next 5 years. We've seen a lot of the oil field, the producer companies, demanding that they don't get paper anymore. They're not staffing up for it. They don't want a piece of paper coming to their head office that they have to review and then do the math on to make sure that the services company did the math correctly. They want to trust that the system is out there, that if somebody said that they did 8 hours and the truck was there for 10 and this piece of equipment is billed out daily, the math should just add up. That's just an expectation.
Yeah.
But you'd be surprised how many people take pen and paper, and the guy in the field, again, you know, this isn't his core job. He just wants to get out. He wants to go home. He wants to go home and go hunting, go fishing, you know, go quadding, whatever it might be. Just be with his family. Doesn't want to be sitting out there doing the math that a system should do. And that's the Johns of the world. If you ask a Josh, the Joshes think it's stupid and they won't even go work for companies that do that.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, we're starting to get a little bit tighter on time here. So I definitely want to hit, you know, continue to hit on some of these takeaways or any of the other key things you might have before we begin to wrap up here.
Well, my final thought would be that, and I'll use a line from one of my favorite movies, Forrest Gump. Stupid is as stupid does. If you keep doing the same thing and you expect that you're just going to get better or more efficient, you're just wrong. It's stupid to think that way, and it's going to be to the detriment of your business. And we've seen so many businesses go out of business mm-hmm. in the last, you know, 3-5 years since there was a major downturn in the oil price. Only the efficient survive. You can cut costs a little bit, you can sell off some of your iron, and you can consolidate your offices, but you can only do that so far, mm-hmm. so long. And then you just have to become better at what you do. And the companies who get better at what they do, they survive best, they're going to win more business, and they're going to keep that business longer, and they're going to be able to be in business longer because they have a sustainable business model. So don't be stupid. And it's just take the time to learn. And I think the work that you're doing with these podcasts and educating new people, whether they're millennials or Gen Xers or whoever, anyone coming into this industry would benefit tremendously from sifting through, and they don't have to watch every video that you've created or every podcast.
Yeah.
But if they selectively chose a few and one a week, became smarter, became a little bit better, so that they could ask more intelligent questions and not have the Johns of the world roll their eyes and go, oh my God, I can't believe I got to answer this guy's question again about what this is what a casing is. And no, you cannot drive your truck up to the pump jack and fill it up with gas. No, you can't do that. Yeah. Right? There's a basic level of understanding of the industry that's required. And I think you're doing a great job. I would strongly suggest to people to look through your archive of podcasts and videos. Some of them are excellent. And I've used them myself. I've been in the industry for 15 years, and there were a couple of things that I didn't know. So I dug in and I listened and I watched. I watched a couple of hours worth of videos just on one subject because it was interesting and I learned more. Will I ever need that for my job? Probably not. But does it make me better in terms of understanding the industry and some of the challenges that other clients face, that my clients face? Absolutely. So,
yeah, for sure, man. Well, I appreciate that.
Have an open mind and learn more.
Definitely got the grasp of the channel. what we're trying to do here, we're just trying to learn from each other and just always keep learning because you never run out of material. Such a big industry, and it can be so valuable to us to have some of the fundamental knowledge of different areas. We never know what our job's going to be, you know, a year from today or tomorrow or even a month, whatever. It's pretty dynamic industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, pretty much go ahead.
I was going to say, any final questions that you have for me?
Yes, the one question, and I thought about asking it clear at the beginning, but wasn't sure where exactly it would best fit in, but one question I want to ask just from people like myself who just graduated, you know, we keep hearing, you know, a lot about, you know, the great crew change, you know, happening. And that is obviously we talked a lot about it today. And I think you mentioned we got, you know, 8 years at best, basically, until it's kind of flushed out, it all happens. But we keep hearing about this and the upcoming lack of talent. And, you know, people not, you know, coming into the industry as much as we'll need to be replacing it. But at the same time, there's a lot of students, a lot of recent graduates, you know, struggling to find a job, to find a company that's hiring. Like, what would you speak to that? Anybody who's trying to find a job right now with all this coming at them, or, you know, with this current dynamic?
If it was my kid going into the work world and they're looking for a job, I would tell them to look at it in 18 to 24 month chunks. So again, just like I kind of said that, you know, that's the reality of the millennial kind of workforce in terms of transitioning between roles. I would say that you've spent 4 years in university or 2 years in a technical college. You spent 4 years in high school, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Look how fast that went. All I'm saying is give it 2 years, give it half as much time, learn as much as you can. And there are certain things that any new employee into the industry, into any industry, needs to be able to do. And that is the first step, the fundamental step, is to be able to show to somebody else that they can get results. Yeah. That result might just be, if you're a data analyst and you were analyzing all of this big data coming in, it might just be putting together some charts and graphs that are relevant to your manager. If you're a new field tech and you're out in the patch and you're working away, it's just making sure that you're doing the job, you're doing it well, you're getting it done on time, you're getting your reports and whatever elements you need to get it in. If you can get that fundamental start in the industry, whether it's the energy industry, whether it's oil and gas, or if it's clean tech, if you want to go work for, again, a solar panel company or somebody selling geothermal, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Just make sure that you can show that you can get results. And then have an idea of how to get to the next level, which is getting results through others. So it's not just about you being the best and being able to do things really well. It's how do you multiply your efforts so that other people are getting better?
Yeah.
I think the differentiating factor in the next generation coming in are going to be those few individuals. And again, there are only a few in in any demographic range who take the time to learn how to make other people better. Those people become so valuable because the force, the workforce, is diminishing and is far more competitive. So the ones who will stand out are the ones who can get results on their own and have shown or can show or want to show that they can get results through other people. And it's not the old carrot and stick whipping them to do better. It's the education, it's the imparting of knowledge, it's the coaching and the mentoring of other people. If there's any millennial who's listening to this, that would be the one piece of advice that I would give, is establish your own foundation for getting results and show how you can get results through other people and make things better mm-hmm. for others.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. This has definitely been a pretty great podcast. I'm glad you reached out to me and glad we settled on this topic. And just so everybody knows too, just for some context here, we're recording this on Saturday night. So Donovan took time out of his night to do this. So a big, big thank you to you for doing that.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
All right. Well, hope your experience here with your first podcast was a good one.
It has been. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. Thanks again so much for being on. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, find you on LinkedIn and your company as well, fieldcap.ca. Is that your website?
Yeah. You can find us at fieldcap.com, or you can find me, Donovan Volk, on LinkedIn.
Sounds good. Well, there you go. So if you want to continue the conversation with them, feel free to reach out. But thanks again so much, Donovan, and we'll catch you guys all in the next episode. Take care.